Hey everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today I'm doing another episode in my series on becoming a professional astrologer. And with me is an astrologer named Lori Lothian. And Lori was in one of my programs back in 2018, when right around the time I first started teaching Hellenistic astrology programs, sort of making a shift from more modern forms into traditional forms. And Lori and I got to talking over an email about the transitions that students make from one form to another. Lori's been around doing astrology for a long time. So she's going to talk to us today about her journey as a professional astrologer and also some key changes that came into her practice when she started studying Hellenistic astrology in particular. So Lori, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I am so delighted to tell people about my, I jokingly call my come to Jesus moment.
Yeah.
Having been an astrologer, more or less studying astrology from and casting hand charts from the 80s, I'm 59, all the way through my life, and then practicing on and off half-heartedly, really. Like, it was kind of something I did on the side and had begun to do it professionally as a real calling, I guess, in 2016-17. But I've always had an issue with a couple of things with the psychological approach of modern astrology rather than the predictive. I tend to be a predictive being. I had done remote viewing and a bunch of weird psychic stuff in my 30s, including clairvoyant readings and tarot cards. And so with modern astrology, the emphasis I had learned in the beginning from my various teachers had been more about looking at the psychology of a person through the chart.
Sure. Yeah, this is great. And that's totally what we're going to get into today. So let's start from the beginning. I want people to get to know you and your story a little bit. Because your experience as a diviner, kind of more broadly speaking, as a reader, as a psychic, as a healer, you've worn a lot of different hats. So, and it was a joy to have you in my programs because you also brought that wealth of experience and knowledge to the program, and often were in the heart of some of the best conversations in class and things like that. Let's start from the beginning. How did you first get interested in astrology? How old were you? How did it get started? Did your parents think you were crazy? Like, I always like hearing people's, you know, like, how did it originally start for you?
Yeah. So for all those young astrologers for whom it's sanctioned now, thanks to the world of astrology busting out and being almost normative, it was considered to be pretty far out there. And I grew up, though, with a very open-minded mom and dad, particularly my mom. My mom was like, you know, I don't know. My mom was just one of those people. Like, I grew up in the 60s and 70s who was just open to everything. So funny enough, I would, you know, getting books out of the library on how to read palms, you know, and on magic and stuff like that. And she thought that was really cool. So I had parents that were accepting of the supernatural metaphysical realm. So that helped a lot. But then I got really pulled in my 20s into astrology. I had bought a book on how to cast your own chart. And guys, the math. Oh my God, I'm terrible at math. You know, God forbid, in the multi-calculations of doing a hand-casted chart for the ascendant, if you make a mistake. So I cut my teeth on that early process. And I didn't think it was anything more than a hobby. But then I was living in New York City at the time, working at a magazine down in Chelsea. And a friend of mine, my colleague, my co-editor at that magazine, stumbled into an opportunity to write astrology books for Berkeley Press. Now, why would we, as two young editors in our 20s working at a magazine, be at all candidates for this? Well, we actually weren't, other than we had an interest in astrology, both of us. And funny enough, this woman went on to become a born again Christian and years later tell me that I was like working with the devil's material. I know, but the guy who wrote the Berkeley paperback. So these are the things that stand, you know, you go to the supermarket and they were always in the 80s and 90s on the stand. He's a famous guy. I actually can't remember his name, but he was famous back then. And he died, but he died without finishing the next year's series of paperbacks, right, that had been incomplete. And his widow decided she would finish it for him, but didn't tell the Berkeley Press that that's what had happened. And so they got this copy and they were panicking because she just recycled the same copy through all of the signs, you know, Virgo, Leo. She just moved everything around and they realized that he had died without finishing it. She was just trying to do her best to do something. So we got pulled in, and I think I did Virgo, Sagittarius, and Leo of what year would have that been? The 1991 release. And my girlfriend did three others and another. So, and then they pulled us in to do a second year as well. Now, And then I think they retired the series. But in order to do that, I had to learn astrology because I was just learning. I was just in the very beginning stages, right?
Yes, you're just getting thrown into this.
I got thrown into the deep end. And I really thought about that, you know, idea of, was I going to be as bad as the widow and just make it all up or not, you know? Or would I actually try to figure out what the sky was doing and what was actually sensible to say for those signs in that year? So that's how I got really thrown into the realm of investigating my own chart and casting my own chart the hard way without the computer technology, to actually looking at astrology and say, there's something here, guys. This thing, this stuff does work.
Yeah, people don't I mean, just to interrupt for just a second, that people don't realize, including myself, until a ways into my career, how difficult it is to cast a chart by hand if you don't know how to do it. I mean, once you get it down, I know when I learned how to cast a chart by hand, which I was like, at some point I have to do it, because enough of my elders in our field, like you, had been like, I had to learn casting by hand. I'm like, well, I got to do this. Like, I got to see what it's all about. And like, holy cow, it would take me like an hour, you know, just to get the chart up. And then there's something kind of nice about it too, but no, I mean, mostly like I'm grateful for the software programs. But for those of you listening who don't know this, you know, software programs have not always been around. And, you know, astrologers for a long time, more often than not, you know, were doing calculations by hand and casting it by hand. And it was a long process involved just in getting the chart ready.
Oh my God.
Okay, continue.
Really was. Yeah. So then after I got involved in the writing of those books, or ghost writing of those books, the author's name was still on them, I then began to cast charts for everybody I knew, you know, friends.
How old were you again at this point?
Oh my goodness. So let's see. I was 29.
Yeah. Okay. So right around your Saturn return too.
Absolutely. And, you know, Saturn in my first house on my ascendant Aquarian, it was a perfect time to get right down into the astrology, right?
Oh, well, here you're at your second Saturn return.
I am. And I, funny enough, leaning into this Saturn return is when I learned the astrology with you in my ninth house perfection age, which is where I want to go. Oh. If I literally had not known Hellenistic astrology, which I now do, I feel like, as I said, it was an eye opener. I wouldn't be looking at my own chart and clients' charts with such predictive accuracy. Like, I could have said to myself, Laurie, in April, you're going to hit your 12th house, ninth house perfection age, and very likely you're going to want to learn something significant, Dharma oriented, to do with your purpose. You know, you could go back to school. And then by October, I stumbled into your class and I found out about it through a chain of synchronicities. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this stuff really works. And if I go back over my ninth house perfection ages throughout time, those every 12th year ages that correspond to the ninth house of higher education, learning, Dharma, you know, the soul, God, I can see that applied. For me, I tend to outpicture those ninth houses as education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So going back in time a little bit. So when you had been interested in all things metaphysical, you're starting to get really serious about astrology and you're thrown in the deep end, actually doing some ghostwriting for like an almanac or something like that. And then this is around your Saturn return. And at that point, you were studying modern astrology. How would you characterize modern astrology? Because some people listening, you know, they're so used to me talking in my mostly Hellenistic, but somewhat modern infused way that they may not even really know the difference. Everyone defines the differences somewhat differently depending on their experiences too. But how would you say you first learned astrology? Obviously, it was attractive enough to keep you in it for a long time. What were the strengths and maybe eventually the things that were like missing that led you to starting to study traditional astrology?
Yeah, well, I think I'm probably the best story possible, but let me just say in general, I learned myself. Like, I had all of Robert Hand's books, you know, Planets in Composite and Planets in Transit. I had a ton of Liz Green's books. I had Stephen Forrest's books. So like, I had a library of probably like 300 astrology books over time. From which I was gleaning all this knowledge and learning how to do stuff. I think at a very fundamental level, my basic problem with my practice of modern astrology for friends and family and myself was, and I was, you know, as I said, I did other things. I was a clairvoyant reader and a remote viewer in my 30s. But with the astrology, is that my own chart never made sense to me. And it's kind of weird. It's like, you know, if you're going to practice medicine, like say I want to be a naturopath, I better believe the stuff worked to help myself, or like my body was healed by my own practice. And,
right.
You know, I had this interception problem because of the quadrant-based house system. And I think sometimes I use Coke, sometimes I use Campanis, sometimes I use whole sign. I use Placidus, but no matter which sign I use, which house sign system I used, I was born in the northern latitudes. And so the further north or south you go latitude wise, you're going to find that your chart's signs, houses, there's 12 houses, can skew pretty dramatically. And in my case, to such an extent that I had like my whole second house intercepted or squashed up in my first house, didn't have its own real place to be. And I had all these planets in a place that made no sense to me. So my intercepted second house planets would have put me in a life of great orientation toward making money and being pretty focused on second house matters. And I would have had basically not much at all happening in my third house. And, you know, I think I had my son in my third house. When I moved to whole sign house system tradition through working with you, I suddenly had this big aha, like, this is my chart. This is really me. This makes sense. And the big thing that shifted for me, not to be too technical for people who may not yet studied astrology, but I ended up creating a stellium of three planets, four if I include the asteroid Athena, because I do use the asteroids, in my third house of the goddess. Now, the third house of the goddess, according to Demetra George, can be about the prophet, the prophets, the oracles, the seers, the writers, of course, because the house that has to do with writing and self-expression, periodicals and magazines. Now, having a stellium there works because I've been a magazine editor and online magazine editor at several online magazines in my life and real magazines and newspapers. I've worked at many different newspapers and magazines in my 20s and 30s. And so all of a sudden that made sense, but at the more esoteric level, this stellium, the moon moved into my third house, in the house of its joy. And in this place where the part of me that had always wanted to be a diviner or a prophet or a seer or a reader for people come to the oracle down there, you know, that kind of oracle. It was what I had been doing. It reflected my life back at me. It just reflected my life back at me. And I'm like, this is what I've been doing. I've been doing these third house stellium things all of my life. And before that, I had just the sun sitting there in my third house. And the other part is I made a ton of money in my life doing real estate deals. And Venus was not in my fourth house before I moved to whole sign houses.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people find that exactly what you're talking about, Lori, which is that, you know, you're doing astrology for a long time. It's working. It's not that it's not working. And there's probably a lot of good things about the more modern psychological approach. For example, in my own practice, you know, I would still consider myself a psychological astrologer insofar as every session includes talking about the way that the planets show up in the psyche and in behavior and in life and in choices and working with the planets in the psyche. That's so modern astrology, which has really in many ways is defined by the marriage of depth psychology or archetypal psychology to the birth chart and to the way a birth chart is read. You know, that's people like yourself way before I got into astrology, you know, these are the things that seem to have attracted most people in. But then, as you said, it's as though you get to a certain point where you're going, I feel like there's something missing, namely the divinatory, prophetic, predictive side of the practice, which is not completely absent from modern astrology, but it's not as well developed as you, at least in my experience, I just felt like it should be. And so I started wondering, well, when you get even just the smallest whiff of like traditional astrology, you're like, oh, that's predictive stuff. And then you want to learn about it. But then, you know, part of you is like, well, you know, I respect free will. I'm not sure I want to go down the path of like just sitting with people and just offering like dry, sterile predictions. But it's really not that, is it? I mean, it ends up being this fusion of counseling people and talking about life, but also having a much more like a total toolkit where you can also do really good, accurate, predictive work. This is my experience, but is that what you found as well, that you were able to actually blend the two?
Yeah, I do feel that it has both elements. It cannot not have them. But I think when it comes right down to it, and I think I'm going to talk about my client today before our call even, you know, I think what I want to say is how accurate is your scrying tool? because whether you're scrying for characteristics of a personality or characteristics of the future, you know, the whole, I'm a zealot for the whole sign house system. So I want to give you just a clear example of a client today that I, repeat client, I saw her again today. But with the whole sign house system, she has her moon at the energetic degree, actually her 12th house. But the point is her moon is there and it's in a really tight square to Chiron, and it's a mother wound. And I said to her the first session, I said, like, your mom was missing, 12th house, absent, not around, problems with mom, what happened? Big wound to Chiron. And the moon would not be in her, would not have been in her 12th house to show me that had I used Placidus, right? Or right. A Kroger-based house system. And she said, yeah, my mom died when I was 3. And, and then I had a series of mother wounds because all the subsequent surrogate mothers were horrible. And, you know, this is her big thing. And she's a high powered executive coach to men because she doesn't trust women necessarily. And, you know, I couldn't say that psychological piece. So in other words, the reflective accuracy of the scrying tool, that some of what is available through the Hellenistic tradition, I don't find available in the Placidus or the other quadrant based house systems. How could I have seen that? I couldn't, I wouldn't have gone there.
Right.
And then the other part of the predictive quality is that, you know, you can move away from the transits, you know, you can move into the time lords. And I find that's exquisitely important because, you know, some transits I do find are less weighted if you know, say, the Lord, the perfection age Lord, the Lord of the age, or if you know the Lord of the solar return, or the Lord, or the Lagna Lord, you know, the planet that rules the ascendant of the client or the native. When you begin to factor in these other variables, you can actually contextualize something like transits in terms of how they apply to the broader planetary influences of a given time in a client's life. And that leads to huge accuracy in that scrying tool. And the fate and free will piece, that's a conundrum. Once you get into astrology that's predictive, and the only predictive book I read when I was in the modern astrology was that little book called Predictive Astrology. And I can't remember the authors, two authors, famous book, but it's all about the transits. And there's no context. And so I find that the astrology, the ancient tradition of astrology allows for this, you can fine-tune the content with the transits, but you have the big broad canvas with the time lords. And without the time lords, you're just talking like, you're just talking about, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good analogy, Achyuta, like, you know, like, why would I want to tell you about each little dabble on a Monet painting if I didn't tell you what the painting was? It's two women sitting by the river with a dog and an umbrella, right. You know? I'd be telling you, look at that red dot and look at that blue dot, but I won't tell you that it's a painting of a woman by a river with two dogs and an umbrella. And the big picture view and the scrying tool using the time lords that come, multiple time lord techniques with the Hellenistic and, you know, Persian and ancient traditions and the Babylonian as well, allow for that. And so it's kind of like you're missing the big picture to give
you. Yeah, there's, it's like definitely one of the things that blew me away about, just because we might be speaking at a level that is pretty, at this point, kind of sort of jargony for people who don't know. So let me just break down some of what Lori just said. So she was talking about whole sign houses and how in Hellenistic astrology, because ancient astrologers used whole sign houses, that along with all of the methodology and the rationale behind why whole sign houses were used, and behind how charts are read with whole sign houses, because it's not just a house system that you could use. I mean, you could use it anywhere, but when people say, oh, I changed to whole sign houses and Hellenistic astrology and it made all the difference, people don't always understand that the whole sign houses comes with this total package of theoretical tools that we use alongside of it to delineate the chart. And most people find that it's the delineation tools along with the new house system that somehow speaks in a way that, you know, and it's a very similar experience to people very accurately. And people have the same experience often when they see an Indian astrologer. Indian astrologers use whole sign houses and they have incredibly elaborate, it's like rocket science, you know, Indian astrology. And they have a very elaborate predictive toolkit that allows them to say very specific things. Hellenistic astrology is a lot like that too. So when I first saw a modern astrologer, for example, a lot of what I heard was about the mythic archetypal characteristics of my behavior and character. And that was really helpful. And I was hooked on astrology just on that alone. But over time, again, what I think, and what obviously would happen for you too, Lori, is you get to the space where you go, maybe there's something more that I need in my toolkit here. And so you're learning Hellenistic astrology. You're getting equipped with this much more sophisticated predictive level of the art. Now, if you can take that and pair it with a psychological analysis, you can do incredible things. Because as exactly as Lori said, if you approach a client who has, let's say, major anger issues, and you go like, well, your chart looks like, you know, you have some like anger issues or whatever, you know, it's really hard to do that. But if I say, hey, did you have a dad who was physically violent, you know, and I can describe something concrete that the chart is saying like that, the person says, yes, I did. And that, you know, then I became an alcoholic and I've struggled with anger. And suddenly the psychological dimension of the conversation is opened because you were able to use a concrete predictive descriptive tool to get into the psychological, whereas going straight psychological doesn't always work. So you need both in your toolkit is the point. And what I hear you saying, Lori, is that this, like many people, was a total game changer, and that all of a sudden you have a full toolkit. And then last thing I'll say, you added to your toolkit, you know, the Time Lords. Lori was talking about what a big difference Time Lords made in her practice. And for those who don't know, a Time Lord or a Chronocrator is basically, you know, in modern astrology, the main way that you're taught is going to be transits and maybe progressions, something like that. Those are usually the two tools that you're taught for prediction, for forecasting. But again, it's going to be pretty much archetypal. You're going to get a sense of big themes psychologically or mythically at certain times. With Time Lords, you're going to get the ability to speak to multiple timelines, both very, very micro and small, and very macro and big, 20-year timelines versus 1 month or 1 week or even 1 day. And so the ability to zoom in really tightly and say very specific, concrete things with transits and Time Lords combined on both very small, limited timeframes, as well as really big ones, is there. And that's also something that most people, until they study traditional astrology, they don't really feel like they have. So just to kind of re-summarize, sorry to like just be redundant, but what Lori just said probably needed just a little bit of translating for people who listen to this channel who are like just totally brand new to Hellenistic astrology. Lori, my next question for you is, so suddenly, you know, you're a ways into your career studying astrology, you start learning Hellenistic astrology, clearly everything changes. If you were to give people advice when they're in the midst of like, you know, I'm already into astrology and now I'm considering having to learn like a whole new form, or I'm just going to take a Hellenistic astrology class or program, what are some of the difficulties? What are some of the challenges? What are some of the things you learned about how to make it through them? Just what advice would you have for people?
Yeah, I think one of my biggest pieces when I was learning it and having to, you know, get this new system under my belt, and although I did feel very intuitively connected to it, like it felt like a homecoming in some way, was I had to really throw out the old. I almost had to like, you know, see no evil, hear no evil, and take my mind away from everything I thought I knew and be really much, very much like a beginner's mind. And like one of the things that I seem to have missed in modern astrology, although maybe it was just me, but I had to throw it out, was how to stop taking each thing in each house and making it about me or the native or the client or whatever, and recognize just how othering everything is. The only house that really is about the client is that first house. And the beauty of that is you can begin to tell them about the father, the sibling, you know, the grandmother. There's places for all of that in the chart. But right. I had this tendency to take every piece of the chart and make it about the client. Like, okay, let's talk about your Mars in the seventh house instead of your angry husband. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know? Yeah. And all of a sudden I recognized that the whole of the mandala of the chart is a composite story of every person that client has in their life. And that's lovely, because then they begin to ask you questions about people in their lives and you can look at their chart and say things, you know? So it became so much freeing. But my advice for others who are like trying to let go of the old system is simply to just do it. Like I almost have to say, I had to resist, you know, in the very beginning, wanting to take everything into the context of the psychological again, and just play with it at the purely what you see is what you get instead. You know, this is exactly what this is. This is the house of the siblings, and you know, there's Pluto Mars there. So maybe there was an angry sibling that you had to control battle with, you know, with maybe abuse there. And, you know, it didn't take me long though to switch over, because I'm an exception here. I had a feeling of my chart didn't fit for so long that, you know, I was always like a bad suit that didn't fit. I couldn't work it for myself. So I kind of am one of those real conversion cases, because I would suggest for anyone wanting to study Hellenistic astrology who has a basic understanding of their natal chart, whether you're an astrologer or not, or you've had many astrologers read your chart, to go to Whole Sign House Systems at astro.com, find the drop-down menu in the extended chart selection, throw your chart up using the Whole Sign House System and sit with it. Maybe you're going to get a feeling that there's something here.
Right. You know? Yeah. It sometimes starts there, and you know, it's, but as you know, like it starts there, but it's also so important that people understand whole sign aspect doctrines, which they're not used to, or that they understand dignities, or that they understand the traditional meanings of the houses. And not only that, but like where the traditional meanings of the houses come from, so that they have these really rich multidimensional understandings that are often needed to make it all click, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, although in modern astrology, there is acknowledgement of dignity, I don't think that it's used as much in terms of also like, where does the buck stop? You know,
yeah.
One of the things I really got more deeply entrenched in my being as a practitioner, and just using this for my own life, is to look at, you know, who's the boss of who in any given moment, you know, in terms of, you know,
the dignity schemes you're talking about now. Yeah.
Yeah, the dignities, but I know, but also in terms of depositors, you know, and
yes,
who's right. In whose house, you know, and right. Is there reception and mutual reception in a natal chart, or, you know, in a transiting situation like we have right now in the sky, right, with that weird reception aversion between Venus and Mars. When you begin to see the nuance, in other words, I think that Hellenistic astrology makes those planets characters in the chart in a way. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. They're people talking to each other, either with easy flow, or they've got a really bad static on the line, or they don't talk to each other at all. No semi-sextiles and inconjuncts, right? Mm-hmm. Those 150 degrees and 30 degrees are kind of not really happening, as opposed to happening. So
right.
The kinds of things that planets do as people in the chart, as energetic beings in the chart, and how, like, as a cast of characters on the stage of your chart, are they talking to each other? And maybe they're not talking at all.
Yeah. Dignities is something that made the planetary community of the chart speak with so much more nuance and sophistication. The interconnections that start appearing when you really get an understanding of dignities, both essential and accidental, are just, it's just mind blowing. So, well, we are getting close to our time limit for today. I can't believe it. It's just flown by. It's really fun talking to you and just hearing your energy and all of the enthusiasm you have for someone who studied astrology for a long time, made a shift to learning a new form, is integrating it into your life and practice. And we appreciate just your sharing and some of the advice that you've given us and your insights. What are you up to? How can people get in touch with you? I'm going to pull up some things on the screen too while you're talking, but tell us about what you do and how people could get in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. My website is lunaticastrology.com. I actually got the website in my last ninth house perfection age before I studied with you. I actually got that website. So funny enough, it took me another 12 years to use it. So don't waste your time, by the way, everybody, waiting to finish all of your studies before you begin practicing astrology. I always encourage you to start setting out to practice, to learn as you go. That's what I did with Achyuta Bhava's class. Sorry, I know you as Adam at first.
I was Adam when you were taking my classes.
I know, but I decided to just go out there and really start practicing it right away and learn as I go on the fly. So within 6 months of your course, I was already using it professionally. Mm-hmm. I also would say, so I'm lunaticastrology.com. Thank you. I'm a crazy girl. And I have a YouTube channel under the same name, Lunatic Astrology. And
here it is right here. You can see it on YouTube, Lunatic Astrology right here.
Thank you so much. And I'm really excited for people who want to come into this world of Hellenistic astrology, and like I did, who've done astrology for a long time. I love to share the excitement I have for it. I am always advocating for your classes too, by the way. And I send a lot of my clients to you, just because I'm not reinventing that wheel. I have to say, anyone still listening, you're a master teacher. You're a natural. What planets are in your ninth house again?
Oh, just the moon.
Okay, that'll do. Yeah.
But yeah, thank you. That's really, really kind of you. And it's great to have you on. And I specifically wanted everyone to hear your enthusiasm for someone who had a long background in astrology and really had great experience making a switch and studying Hellenistic, and that you didn't feel like it was like people often come to the course and they look and they're like, I think I know all of this already. Houses, planets, signs, like, but if you haven't studied it from the traditional perspective, it is mind blowing all the things that you never really learned. And not in a like condescending way, like you don't know anything. You'll actually find that you're really well prepared if you already have some background in astrology, and that but your game goes to like a whole nother level. So
I have to add one more thing. Not only does your game go to a whole new level, but because you're using predictive techniques, your clients come back. They're back. I have repeat clients. I'm word of mouth mostly, but I'm have to say they come back because they say, oh my God, you were right. And that's what happened. And right. I'm so glad I knew. And I'm so glad I could prepare because my mom might be sick this year. You said eclipse to right. the moon, you know, and your clients come back to you because you're not telling them just, this is your psychology. Once you know it, what are you going to do? They come back because you're helping them navigate life in a way that they can be proactive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And even, you know, I tell my students this all the time, but you don't have to get everything right in a reading either. If you get even a few good key insights or predictions right, as well as create a meaningful conversation for the soul, people really remember that combination and come back. Even if you ended up getting a few things a little off too, which is good, because we all do, you know, even though it's predictive astrology and it's really, my accuracy has gone way up as a reader, still get some things wrong sometimes.
Absolutely. But you don't have to be perfect, but we did, yes. we just have to be good enough.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Well, anyway, thank you so much for being here today. Really appreciate it. And to all of you, go check out lunaticastrology.com. If you have questions that you want to ask Lori about being an astrologer, she's got readings, she's got a content that she creates on YouTube. Really, it was great having you in class and just all of your insights and experience. And actually got to connect briefly with Lori at an astrology conference at one point and met her in person. And so it's fun to try to showcase what students who come through my programs are doing and what people are up to and what they've had to share about their journey. So thanks everybody for listening, and stay tuned. We'll do another episode soon and talk more about becoming a professional astrologer. All right. Take it easy, everyone.